welcome to a happier Trinity Tims podcast than many probably expected on Saturday afternoon. I'm going to start with a little quiz for any eagle-eyed viewers out there. See if you can name the master behind this quote. It was the start of December the 4th. We've been aware of Wilfried and the quality of his work for some time. He was our number one candidate when we began the process of appointing a new manager. And we are delighted that he's joined the club. I know he's huge.
Joe's still having Wi-Fi issues.
We're losing you, Joe.
Lost you, Joe. Joe is lost in the world. you want to take over for the moment?
Hold on. I think we have movement. Let's see what happens.
At least I hope I'm
back. Are we live?
He's back.
How many pops?
You hear me?
I'm back. Again.
We can hear you.
I'll rattle through that quote a bit quicker. We've been aware of Wilfried and his quality of work for some time. He was our number one candidate when we began the process of appointing a new manager, and we're delighted that he agreed to join the club. I know he is hugely excited about this opportunity to be part of Celtic's future. We will give Wilfried every support to face the challenges ahead, with our aim, as always, being to deliver the success for the club which our supporters deserve this season and beyond. Congratulations, if anyone guessed that was Michael Nicholson, our utter clown of a CEO, the man that brought Wilfried Nancy to Celtic, the man that brought Paul Tisdale to Celtic, the man that brought Mark Lowell to Celtic, and we can all rhyme off a dozen complete dud signings, including the latest guy on loan from Bournemouth, never a footballer in a million years, as much a footballer as Shin Yamada and Hayato Inamura. Good luck back in Japan, Hayato. It's never going to work for you at Celtic. Maybe you should get an agent that contacts the manager that you're about to sign in future. So thankfully, we get two for the price of one today. We get rid of Nancy and we get rid of Tisdale. Now, we just need to get rid of the clowns that appointed them. And we know that the Celtic executives will shrug their shoulders. Was it me? Club signings, nothing to do with me. They'll all point to a big golf course far away in the Caribbean. But unfortunately, lads, with the salary, with the titles, you guys are responsible. So, Michael Nicholson, you appointed Wilfried Nancy. You appointed Paul Tisdale. Do the decent thing. You have got absolutely no... You've got less credibility than ever. What a start you've had to the new year. You lost to your good friends across the city on Saturday, and today you lost a football manager and a head of football operations, and we're only 5 days into 2026. So it's time for Nicholson to go. Or am I having a rant, Eric? So I'm joined tonight as usual. I got the short straw of the long straw. I'm hosting tonight, and I'm joined by Eric Knott from Reed Celtic and James Forrest from the Celtic blog. So am I off my nut half celebrating, but looking for more blood in the Celtic boardroom? I'll start with you, Eric.
Well, yeah, it's been an interesting day. There's no doubt about that. I started the day by writing an article saying where I didn't believe that the board would have the balls to pull the plug on Wilfried Nancy because they wouldn't scrape so low as to beg for a new interim manager to come in because it would make them look like the incompetence that they are. So I'm actually absolutely delighted that I got that wrong. And, you know, I'll hold my hands up and say my prediction was totally wrong, but I'm delighted with the news this evening that that Nancy and Tisdale are gone. However, it's still only the beginning, as far as I'm concerned, to setting this whole shit show right, because that's what it is. It's a shit show and a debacle. And the only way that it's going to be right is if Michael Nicholson follows and Chris McKay with him too as well. But at the same time, we can start to you know, kind of look at it from the perspective now that the season is salvageable. And we've said that all along. We said that the season could be salvaged. We're only 6 points adrift of Hearts. We get someone in who puts us on a good run. It's going to be a close run thing, I would say, in the end. But I think we can definitely compete. We know, and we've seen from what Martin O'Neill did during his short tenure at the club, that if these guys, you know, whatever limitations they have, if they're pulled together in the way that they were under Martin O'Neill, they can get results. However, you know, tight some of those might have been, they were still racking up the results and they still got 7 out of 8 wins. So the reality is that I was reading all the articles in the SMSM over the last few days there, and I mean, reading Keevan's, reading Tom English, reading Keith Jackson today, couldn't argue with any of them. That's the problem. Like, they're all shooting fish in a barrel at the moment. It's so easy for them at the moment. This is their wet dream. This whole debacle is their wet dream. And they're all on the money, because it's absolutely simple to be on the money in all of this. And it's, as I said, it's been spoiling my ability to take the piss out of them, which is another thing that the board has taken away from me. So, you know, with the way they're behaving. But to be honest, the question that now has to be answered is, who's going to come in the interim? And I see a couple of guys there saying in the comments that Sean Maloney will take training tomorrow. That would be expected. Who else is going to take training? He's the man who's best placed to do that. But who's going to come in the interim? Is it going to be Martin O'Neill? Martin O'Neill, I would feel, is definitely somewhat pissed off at the way he wasn't given the opportunity to take us up to the new year, that he wasn't given the opportunity to take us through the cup final. He has stated since that he would have liked it had he been offered it. So is it going to be a case now that his pride will trump his love of Celtic, because he won't want to, you know, make it look to Dermot Desmond if he comes knocking again on the door or calling him on his phone that he's, you know, he's easy and that he's just always going to be Mr. Fix-It now for Celtic. I just think that O'Neill has a bit more pride than that. So I would be doubtful that he's going to take the role. And the fact that there wasn't an immediate announcement, just like there was the time after Rodgers was, handed in his resignation, O'Neill was immediately spoken about by the notice that was put up on the website. So who was that leaving then? Ange Postecoglou? I honestly don't think that Ange Postecoglou was even in the running. I don't think he'd come back to Celtic. He saw this shit show coming down the line 3 years ago. He's not a man who suffers fools gladly. So he's certainly not going to work with the clowns and cretins that are inside in the club right now. I would say that if Andrew was going to come back, Andrew would be coming back on his terms. And part of his terms would be, I run the show and you guys can go and fucking deal with that. It's that simple. You know, so I somehow don't think they're going to cede that kind of control to somebody. So that's why I think the Ange Postecoglou scenario is not a runner either. I might be wrong. I don't know. But today is a step in the right direction. Another step in the right direction will be Nicholson and Mackay's resignation. But we've also learned today that, according to David Lowe on X, that Peter Lawwell is still lurking in the shadows at Celtic Park. And I did say, I think last week or the week before, that there was no fucking way that guy was going to go away without, you know, without some sort of a role, even if, albeit working from home, whatever the case may be. And I wouldn't be surprised if he had something to do with getting that scout from Chelsea in. But he's still there, lurking in the background, pulling strings like he's always done. He was never, ever going to walk away into the sunset. Finally, before I pass over to James, I would imagine that Brendan Rodgers is feeling so vindicated today. I would imagine he is actually laughing off at the whole scenario right now. And it must be taking him all he can do not to send a text to Dermot Desmond with just 4 words, I told you so. And that's it. I mean, that is all he needs to say. Because he obviously told Dermot Desmond so. And Dermot Desmond decided to character assassinate him for giving him the facts. Because it's clear that Rodgers all along knew that that Tisdale was a fraud. And he wanted to tell Dermot Desmond that Tisdale was a fraud. But billionaires don't like being made fools of. And I'm sure that Dermot Desmond is smarting from everything that's happened, and today was the final straw. Well, sorry, should I say Saturday was the final straw. That was a case of enough is enough. He pulled the plug. I did say this morning I didn't think that the board would have the balls to do it. The board don't have the balls. He has all their balls in a vice, and he's the one who made the call, guaranteed, whether it's from a golf course in Barbados or from his mansion in Dublin. Who knows? But he made the call. And I'm sure he will make some more calls, because there is no way that Nicholson can survive this. There's no way he can survive this. The club has no credibility if they keep that man in place after what's happened. None whatsoever. So I'll pass over to James, and James can give us his take on everything.
I'll jump in first of all. I think Ange Postecoglou is a possibility. I don't know his exact feelings, but I think if he was told you can come to Celtic and you get control of everything, that's a hell of a big if. But I suspect Dermot Desmond won't be trusting the clowns he's had in place recently with any more decisions. He was charged by Tisdale, taken in by Tisdale, and thought, oh, here's a football guy I can put in charge of football things. But as we said at the time, Michael Beale's a football guy, and so are various other chancellors. But I think the right circumstances, Ange might fancy this. Ange must be pushing 60 now. I don't know if he just fancies life back in Australia in the sunshine, but if he fancies a decent project, managing Celtic and tapping into Celtic's potential might work for him. But one guy that's escaped attention, Gavin Strachan. What is the point? If Sean Maloney's taking training, Gavin Strachan survived Rodgers leaving. He was the continuity guy. Eric, you mentioned the fact that Lowell is still lurking around according to company's house, but I think that's just laziness in Celtic's part. Ampadu and the rest of the chimps that came with Wilfred Nancy never ever made it onto the Celtic website. They were never announced as Celtic coaches. On the page, it's got the backroom staff that only covered Stevie Woods and Gavin Strachan. Ampadu never made it there, so I suspect it's just laziness. But James, it's been an interesting day in the world of Celtic. I don't think there was much expectation this morning that things are going to move so fast. But as we all know, we don't have a functioning board. They're all pretend directors, pretend executives, because there's one guy that calls the shots. And the fact that there was no name put on the Celtic statement, a brief statement for Nancy and Tisdale disappearing, says so much about the club. What was your take on events today? How horrific a situation is Nicholson in just now? And what's the likely outcome of the manager search?
Well, I'll give you a heads up on something that came my way a few weeks ago. A few boys for your bus were spoke to a senior staff member who told them that the players had already gone in the board and told Nicholson and other people that this was dead in the water. I didn't want to write the story at the time because it didn't. There wasn't enough backing it up. But when I was talking about the Band of Brothers thing the other day, the Colonel Sink, and what do you call them? The Band of Brothers story about the training officer sacked after the soldiers went to sink. I was sort of hinting at it. So I knew that there had been some kind of minor player revolt, or I'd heard that there'd been some kind of minor player revolt. Listening to what McCown's statements in the aftermath of the game, it was absolutely obvious that the dressing room was gone, gone, gone. You know, there's a difference between some senior players going to the directors and saying, we have concerns here. This isn't going to work. And a guy like Luke McCown sitting there and all but saying, you know, if I had any say in this, he would be Packers. That was the subtext that everything McCown said. And people were asking me at the weekend why I thought that Callum McGregor hadn't been asked his opinion. And I said, well, number one, Callum McGregor's not been asked his opinion, because Callum McGregor might give his opinion. And number two, Callum himself doesn't want to make things any worse than they are. But if somebody actually put McGregor in front of a microphone and asked him for his view on this, you might have heard the answers and it would have been over. So I'm sure that there was a lot the stuff getting said behind the scenes. When the players got balled to the right at Celtic Park on Saturday, it was most definitely over. Because, as I said in an article last week, you've got guys who are playing out of position and getting blamed for their performances, playing in unfamiliar roles, and they're not going to accept that. Professional football players who know that this isn't working and know this is wrong, aren't going to accept that for very long. So I think it was a combination of various different things. The board got me a stick at the weekend and they've had for a long time. And as you and I, Joe, have said a million times, there have to be people at the club who are only responsible for this mess, who are simply rubber stamping decisions getting taken somewhere else, who are saying to themselves, well, we'll be eating shit for every week. This isn't really down to us. We're only doing what we're told today. And I a number of different elements have came together. There was something else me and my mate were discussing at the weekend. As former Labour boys, we know that Brian Wilson used to be a guy to take seriously. He was a cabinet secretary and all that, and he knew his stuff. And the idea that Brian Wilson, even in an interim position as chairman, was going to watch an absolute farce happening when he, at that point, is in an executive position, he did something about it, seemed pretty ludicrous. As I said to my mate, you and I know Brian from way back. Is it conceivable that this guy just sits there and waits on some guy in Ireland making the decision when he can just call a board meeting right now and say something's got to be done here, and if the guy in Ireland doesn't like it, he can sack us off? So I'm not saying that Brian Wilson's led the process here, but I would have been very surprised if Brian Wilson, in the chairman's role, simply sat and let this continue to deteriorate, because he's no stupid guy. He's kept his heat down, he's kept his mouth shut, and he's been very quiet for a long time. But he's the man with this. He's got some power now. He's got some swing, and I think maybe he's swung the axe or used whatever influence he's got and whatever short time he's got it. And yeah, Wilson is a dinosaur. In strict terms, he is. But he's no stupid guy either. And Brian Wilson has to live here, and Brian Wilson does have a lot of... He's one of the people that thinks about his long-term reputation. And he's one of the guys who I've been thinking about for a wee while. You can't be sitting on this board and watch this and know that this shit show is taking place, and it's no your fault, and you've not done anything to deserve it, and you're getting tarred with the brush with all the rest of these guys. That was untenable for a guy like Wilson. And whatever the time I've said on this show that somebody should resign and do us a favour and step forward and say the situation at Celtic Park is a mess and somebody has to speak up, Brian Wilson's the guy I've had in mind. And it's interesting the way the day's transpired. Joe, congratulations on Paul Tisdale and Wilfred Nancy. You called both of them. Absolutely called it, mate. When I was looking for positives, you were very clear-eyed about the whole state of affairs. And what I kind of believe, right, is having listened to the guy getting interviewed, having seen his performances, having seen how he wants to run the team, even if he assumed that Tisdale took the lead, right, and Tisdale was the guy who ran the whole thing, at some point, Tisdale still had to submit this for formal boardroom approval, and they had to sit down with Nancy and interview that guy. So I want to know who the fuck was in the room and gave that interview. Who took that interview and thought this guy was the guy? Michael Nicholson can't survive this. There's just no way. If he wasn't in that room, then that's an abrogation of responsibility. If he was in that room, then it's decisions on him as much as any person, and he's a joke. That's a joke. Everything that has gone wrong here has gone wrong, I think, as much in the communication level as anywhere else. Because Paulina talked about this in a piece that she wrote. She's a linguist. That's what her qualifications are in. She's got a master's degree in linguistics. And she said that there is a major difference between conversational English, which helps you get by in a normal day-to-day, and what's called instructional English, which is if you have to impart information to somebody to get them to do something that you want them to do, right? She's an English teacher, so what she does is instructional English. And she listened to Nancy a few times and was like, I don't even see conversational language, because so sometimes you sit and listen to him and you think, what's he trying to say? I don't quite get, and I hear all the words, but they're not quite in the right order and they don't quite communicate the message. So the idea that he was ever going to be able to get through to players is mental. But more importantly, both members sat in front of that guy and asked him to explain himself. And how he ever did that, how he ever got his ideas past him, is will forever be unexplained, because there's just no way. No way. Credible people would never have hired him based on an interview. A magical power they thought he possessed, but yeah, I certainly don't think that he was able to clearly get his ideas across to him, because he's no managed to do it to the media, he's no managed to do it to the fans, he's no managed to do it to the players. So how he's convinced members of the board that he was the right guy, I do not know. Even if you're asking him questions and he's answering them in a way you understand, his grasp of what was necessary to manage in Glasgow, his grasp of what the requirements of being Celtic boss were, or just, they just, there was none of it. None of it was there. I don't know how I ever got through the interview process. Unless Tisdale was trusted to date, or, which I don't really believe. At some point, the executive members must have stepped in and done an interview with this guy and approved it. I'm amazed. But I'll tell you what I do know. I don't know why fan media wasn't allowed to really sit in front of him and talk to him. I completely get that now. It is a punitive action against fan media by the club. But somebody took the decision that fan media couldn't possibly get in front of this guy and ask him questions. And at the same, he's the only manager, he's the only Celtic manager in my living memory who never got an official unveiling by the club, with two directors sitting either side of him and introducing him to the press and the media. And we all asked questions why that was the case. And we know why that was the case. Half the board at least didn't want him hired in the first place. But the people who sat and gave him the interview must have got their way. And I don't know how he done it. And they should all go on off. They can't possibly say it's mental. I said, this past few weeks has been a disaster. As I said in the intro, which I scribbled up earlier on, he's lasted less time than Russell Martin. He's lasted less time than Brian Clough did at Leeds. He's lasted less time than Liz Truss did. There's no way to dress this up as utter than a disaster. It's a good day, by the way, for us. It's a good day, but it's an incomprehensible mess. I don't know how we got here. Genuinely don't know how we got here. Joe, if a guy like you read this in 5 minutes, how the incompetence on the board of directors ever approved this guy, I do not know. It's mental. It's incredible to me.
I think they were presented with fait accompli. I don't think there's any interview process. I think Tisdale had it all stitched up. There's no way that anyone... I suspect that no Celtic director had a face-to-face conversation with Nance before he was appointed. Even a balloon, even the guy with the lack of charisma, lack of personality, lack of backbone, the lack of everything that is Michael Nicholson, would have flagged up and said, we might have a problem here, because you've got to have 100% English or be bloody brilliant at your job, and Nancy is neither. So there's no way he was getting away with it. But I don't think that there's much of an interview process. They were told, here's your new manager. When Nicholson gave an awkward hug to me in the taxi at Lennoxtown, I wouldn't be surprised if that was the first time that the two men had met each other. Here's Michael, he's the token chief executive. Just ignore him and keep in touch with Paul and Dermot, and they'll keep you right. So I don't think I'm known. I would not give Brian Wilson credit for anything. Brian Wilson's been a non-executive director for 20 years. He approved of Michael Nicholson becoming the CEO. Didn't ask any questions of Mark Lowell. There's been umpteen resignation matters for a competent non-executive director over the years. So it may be a coincidence that Wilson's in the director, the chairman's chair. Well, Nancy gets that. James, you want to come in? Over to you.
Hi, there's some people commenting saying, I'm talking about asking about Desmond, because that's the next question, isn't it? That's automatically the next question. If this is, you say, mate, was a fait accompli, and they were just tell, this is the guy, Paul's done all the work, this is the guy, right? Then that means that the guy in Ireland has been royally grafted like some fucking idiot who's bought London Bridge. So what's he say about his smarts if some fucking slippery used car salesman can walk in there and get his ear and convince him that he's got all the answers? I mean, Desmond doesn't come out of this, does he?
No, he's not smart. I mean, we've criticised in the past, but he has had a very, very good knack of appointing the right manager. He brought in Martin O'Neill ahead of you. I'm trying to get his name. The Dutch guy, Hiddink, ahead of Hiddink in 2000. He went for Brendan Rodgers in 2016. Gordon Strachan was probably his as well. But yeah, that was from a day at Cheltenham races, our thorough professional recruitment process. Dermot Desmond, he's got one very large black mark against him now. He was duped by Tidsdale. He must be kicking himself, but it's history. His statement about Brendan Rodgers 20 minutes after he resigned is also part of Dermot Desmond's legacy. And I noticed he hasn't come out and slaughtered Wilfred Nancy. So we're a couple of hours on from his resignation. Oh, no, sorry, his sacking. And Dermot Desmond hasn't put the boot in. Eric, what's a timeline? What process do you put in this before Michael Nicholson disappears out of Celtic? I mean, he's been a non-event. He's been an empty suit for long enough. But this is surely one too many for him. He can't brass neck this one. Surely,
it has to be the end for him. But I mean, maybe now, after what's happened today, Dermot Desmond is giving him time to think and, you know, put his resignation together, whatever the case may be. I don't know. But I just want to touch on what you guys were talking about there. And as you said, Joe, that it was all like a fait accompli. One of the things that struck me about the whole debacle was that I think you're 100% correct in saying that Tisdale just said, he's my man. And I think when we look at Dermot Desmond and where Dermot Desmond is at, he's become gradually more and more disengaged from the club. And he has left people in control of the club who are clearly not fit to control the club. And we have seen what way that has spiraled, or that downward spiral that has taken in the last half a year or so. Well, really from last January when Kyogo was sold. But the point I'm trying to make is that for so long, this board rode its luck. And they convinced themselves, I believe, based on what Tisdale told them, that they were getting somebody in who was going to hit the ground running in a similar fashion to Ange Postecoglou. Now, they took a similar gamble on Ange Postecoglou because, look, without going down through the history of it, we know what happened when Eddie Howe fell through and they were desperate to get a manager in. And they landed on their feet with Ange Postecoglou. But I think these guys became so insulated in their luck that they believed that they could do it again. They believe that they could blag their way through it again. And this has been the pattern for so long now. Yeah, but the pattern for so long now is that they have ridden their luck. They've done things like what they did with Neil Lennon. They appointed him in the shower. They rode their luck with him up to that point. And then thereafter, okay, the following season before COVID hit, we did quite well. We did okay, we'd say. But it spiraled out of control and we ended up heading into the COVID season. Then, obviously, we had Ange. And we all saw what happened with Ange. They thought Ange, you know, they thought that all the Christmases came at once with Ange. But they became so insulated in that belief that they would never fall, that they would never become unlucky at Celtic. They were always lucky. And they believed that luck would never run out. But unfortunately, it was. And we said this for years, guys. Let's be honest about it. We said it in so many articles that the luck was, they rode their luck, and that luck was eventually going to run out. And unfortunately for them, it ran out with Winfried Nancy. And that's the simple fact of the matter. He was not the man for the job. They took a gamble believing that they would get the same result that they got with Ange Postecoglou, and they got the total polar opposite to what they got with Ange Postecoglou. Because the thing about Ange Postecoglou was that, just like we've touched on earlier on in this podcast, Ange Postecoglou had a fantastic grasp of the English language. He was fantastic at carrying himself in press conferences. He was also brilliant, you know, at fighting back when people tried to back him into a corner. The guy knew to convey himself, how to convey himself, and how to bring himself across perfectly to the press and to, you know, in any interview situation. Yeah. He was very, very well equipped to answer questions.
Remember, Ange sat at his interview and said, I usually win something in my second year, but this is Celtic and I have to win something right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the thing about Ange Postecoglou was, Ange Postecoglou made you believe him. That was the thing. When he had his press conferences in the run-up to, you know, when he was going through that tricky period at the start, when he lost to Midtjylland, and then after that, when he lost the Hearts game, and, you know, the press were out for his guts at that stage, and we had the whole Hugh Keevans, you know, Ange article, which we all know went down in infamy. He defended himself to the hilt, but what he managed to tell you, what he planned on doing, what he was putting together, how he put it on the training pitch, and how the players reacted to the way that he did it, everything he did convinced us that he was on the right track and that it was only a matter of time. And by the time we got to the game against Dundee, where Kyogo got his hat-trick, we all saw exactly what he was trying to do. And it just went on an upward scale from thereafter. It just elevated continuously thereafter. So you never, ever got a glimpse of that with Wilfried Nancy. You never saw it. You never, much and all as you wanted to believe or wanted to try and get on board with the guy, he just did not convince you in any way, shape, or form. And that was the thing. He did, the language barrier was immediately a stumbling block for him because he couldn't get across. He couldn't convey his ideas. Like, for example, he just couldn't convey his ideas like Ange Postecoglou was able to convey his. And if he couldn't convey them in press conferences and he went off in 7-minute rants like he did last Friday and made no sense, if you ask me, in that rant, How do you think the players reacted to what they were listening to? You know, I can't imagine what it was like in the dressing room, but I'm sure at times the guys were scratching their heads. You know, and they were probably saying to themselves, what is this guy on about? You know? And I'll allude to what we said a couple of weeks back. You know, when people were saying, oh, he's going to lose the dressing room or he's lost the dressing room. I don't believe he ever had the dressing room. And that was his downfall. He never had them from day one. I don't think he had them from the minute he walked into the building. You know, this guy was on a hiding from he was on a hiding to nothing from day one because he was never going to be a Celtic man. He would never understand the culture. He was never going to understand the fan base. He was never going to understand the media. He just wasn't equipped for it. And that in itself shows us blatantly the shortfallings of our board, that they actually let that slip through the net. They let that man get into our club. And for him, it was like winning the lottery. You know, I mean, it was probably the biggest role he's ever going to, you know, it's probably the biggest role he's ever going to get in his life. He's never going to get a role like this again.
I think it's all we'll ever get.
But the reality is, it was, I think from the cup final, it was only ever destined to go one way. Even like, there was never going to be a prolonged run of form. We might, if we'd stumbled along with him, we might have won 2, lost 3, won 1, lost 1. You know what I mean? It would have been totally erratic. The whole form book would have been just completely erratic under this guy. We never would have strung together like 10, 15 wins in a row with this guy. And that's what it takes. It's like I said in an article I wrote the other day there, you know, this guy has lost 6 of his 8 opening games. Most managers at Celtic don't lose 6 games in a season. You know? And I think, like, the board at the moment is they're setting unwanted record after unwanted record. And I've pointed out over there
about how long it's taken Celtic managers to lose 6 games. I don't know if you guys saw it. See if we can find it. But I thought it was fairly horrendous. His record was fairly horrendous in that regard.
Yeah.
The quick manager got 6 losses.
We are now under this board in a position where we have not won a game against the Ibrox side in the Scottish Premiership since September of 2024.
Right, here's what the record says, right, if you want to hear it, right? Games to hit 4 losses in the league, right? Took Nancy 6 matches, took Mowbray 21, took Dyer 38, Strachan 40, Lennon's first belt 43, Ange took 44 games, 51 games in Lennon second, Roger second, 57 in Martin O'Neill's first, and 76 in Roger's first spell. That's unbelievable. So that, not even worse.
Yeah, even that pretty much sums it up. But, I mean, the next manager who comes in the door, I mean, he needs to win against the Ibrox side. That's the reality, because we haven't won against them since September 2024 in the Scottish Premiership. We have beaten them in cup ties. We have won in the league. And that's not good enough. If you're wanting to stay one step ahead of these guys, being incapable of beating them is pathetic. And when the one, I'll finish on this. On this point, when the Ibrox supporters were trolling us with Keep the Board on Saturday, that spoke volumes, because these are guys who have been ridden every which way but sideways by their board for years, and they recognize the fact that our board is no worse than theirs. And that's a sad indictment now of the Celtic board, and that's why, when, I mean, that alone should be curtains for the likes of Michael Nicholson and Chris Mackay and anybody else, you know, who feels that overseeing this shit show is acceptable, when those fans are actually singing that they should be kept. That's the worst endorsement you could possibly get. Worst endorsement you could possibly get.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, Joe, can I say something about Ange for a second?
Aye.
You've actually said something about him, right? There's a lot of people on there talking about Ange. I've written a couple of times that the prospect of Ange coming back was zero. I no longer think that it's zero. I don't think we would take it as an interim appointment. If it was going to be Ange, we would have to offer him the sun, the moon, and the stars. But the great thing is that he's not really in any position to turn the job this size down if we came calling. And we're not really in any position to turn the manager into that quality down if he's available. So I think it will change, that some middle ground will be found if he wants to come back. And right now, we're the best offer he's going to get as well, because it's not the Spurs experience, it's the Notts Forest experience that's made it incredibly unlikely that he's going to get another job in the top flight in Ireland. But if he goes somewhere else and proves himself, then maybe somewhere along the line he's got a shot at a top five league. But it would have to be at a club that won things, and it'd have to be a club that he could go in and make an instant impact and restore his reputation. And it's an absolute perfect fit. And I no longer think that's important.
Yeah, Celtic could make an impressive pitch to Ange, but it wouldn't be as caretaker manager. It wouldn't be as football manager. It would be, come in and do things your way. Remember that time when you had your agent, Frank Tremboli, in charge of recruitment, when you're bringing in ready-made players that make an impact, win trophies, and then get sold for a profit instead of all these staff funds. So it's up to Celtic. Who knows? Ange might think, I did 2 years in Glasgow. It's not a very nice place. I quite enjoyed myself there. He could probably get an offer from the MLS. There could be offers in Australia. He's been on the move for quite a time. He might want to get back to Australia for his kids to grow up in Australia. Or he might think, I could maybe make something of this Celtic job. I know what's required there. I know what the potential is. And he's older and wiser. He was very pragmatic for Spurs to win the Europa League. So there's a decent pitch at Celtic could make to Ange Postecoglou, whether the club's prepared to concede that power for him to come in and put his own people in place, who knows? But the message I got was, Dermot Desmond always felt that there wasn't a football person in the club. Paul Tisdale filled that void, and he's had his fingers burnt spectacularly. So,
Desmond was actually right about it. If Desmond wants to bring back Martin O'Neill in a director of football type role, that would be the best appointment we could make, bar none.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I want to ask you guys a point on this. Do you have the slightest sympathy for Wilfried Nancy? I have absolutely none. None whatsoever. The old saying, oh, it's terrible when somebody loses their job. This guy was at it from day one. His first interview, he was on about respecting human beings and building partnerships. That's for the human resources manager. That's for the welfare manager. Your job's to win football matches. There was nothing he said in any pre-match or post-match interview that I agreed with. He was discussing games and situations that I had never seen anything like. He was totally aloof. He was away with it. His media conference on Friday was a complete joke. And in other circumstances, Ronnie Dyler's maybe due some sympathy, and Wilfried Nancy, absolutely none. He was, wasn't prepared, wasn't qualified for the Celtic job, should never have been anywhere near it. He should have realised that when he was offered the job. But he came in, he took the job. He was going to reinvent the wheel, show his jocks how to play football. He'd learned it for 20 years in North America. I've got no sympathy for him. Eric, do you have any sympathy for Wilfried Nancy tonight?
Not really, no. I probably would have had some sympathy for the guy if he had been more pragmatic with his approach from day one. But if he'd been more pragmatic with his approach from day one, he probably wouldn't find himself in the situation he's in right now. So he is the architect of his own downfall. And from that perspective, I have no sympathy for him. He brought about his own downfall. The disrespect that he showed Martin O'Neill by only having a 15-minute handover and to not listen to a guy who had just come in, had turned around the fortunes of the club, won a cup semi-final, won 6 out of 6 league games. Okay, he lost a game against Midtjylland. Tough game because they were top of the Europa League group stage, you know. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, that he completely dismissed Martin O'Neill, as far as I'm concerned. He showed the man no respect. He completely disrespected him by ditching everything that he had done and put in place for the time that he was there. I'm not saying that Wilfried Nancy should have taken, you know, just taken over the formation and the way that, that Martin O'Neill was doing things, but it should have been a gradual process. It should have been a, okay, I'll play the next couple of games with the formation and then I'll talk to the players and we'll look. We'll maybe go to January with things the way that they are and then we can look. We can be pragmatic about it and then we can look to bring in the players that I want to fit into my system and we can start changing it gradually. But as you said, Joe, he wanted to reinvent the wheel. And he was just, his arrogance was staggering in that regard. And I think that everybody within the playing squad were probably blown away by his arrogance. And it was probably the thing that rubbed them up mostly in the wrong way. That this guy would not deviate from. Like, how many times did we talk about Brendan Rodgers' tactical inflexibility? And how much it frustrated us, and how much it drove us around the twist, the way Brendan Rodgers was wedded to his tactical system. The big difference was that while we might have been losing a game here and there, for the most part, Rodgers' tactical system worked. Yep. So he was justified in being wedded to his tactics. Nancy was not. And I suppose for me, it culminated in the, you know, it all came home to roost in the Motherwell game. When you are being made to look like amateurs by a guy who is a New Zealand international, who had been previously at 2nd and 2nd division Danish clubs and then a 2nd division Austrian club. And this guy owned us. This guy actually owned us, Elijah Just. He's one of the up-and-coming young players in the Scottish Premiership at the moment, but he made utter fools out of our defence in the game against Motherwell. And I began to come to the conclusion after that game, you know, when I was watching Nancy and Nancy's body language. And did any of you ever notice that all the guy ever did when the camera panned towards him was he'd look at everything and he'd just. That's all he ever did. That's the only facial expression the guy ever made. He had this sniffle that he did. And that's all he did. And he didn't react in any way, shape or form. When you were seeing attack after attack after attack after attack coming at you and you're doing nothing to change it. You're like a rabbit in the headlights and you're doing absolutely nothing to change it. You just look stunned. Something's radically wrong then. And like, I honestly believe that if you had put the Celtic B team that plays, you know, against Celtic with that formation, the Celtic B team would have got goals against them. No problem. They would have torn them apart. If they employed a 4-3-3 system against Nancy's 3-4-3 system, and you put the Bees against the senior team, I reckon the Bees would have beaten the senior team. Genuinely. Because a schoolboy team could have got goals against that team the way they played against Motherwell.
Agreed.
James, you're a mellow guy. You like to see the goodness of people. Have you any sympathy for Wilfred Nancy?
When he sat at his first press conference and was asked the question about Martin O'Neill, and they asked if he discussed tactics or strategy or setup, and he said, no, I would just say a general hello. And he said something about, at this point, we're all professionals. And I thought, that's quite dismissive, isn't it? That's quite dismissive. That's somebody saying, I don't have anything to learn for this guy. And I was actually quite impressed by that attitude at first. But if you're going to take that attitude, you damn well better be able to carry it, and you couldn't. And that's the problem, he couldn't carry it. He was nowhere near as knowledgeable, and he was nowhere near as smart as he thought he was. And in hindsight, to dismiss a guy like O'Neill's experience, to just not listen to anything he had to say, to know what he didn't have to say, not believe he has to take any advice or get any information or anything. It's absolute lunacy. It's no self-confidence. It's arrogance. It's very hard to have sympathy for somebody like that. Very difficult. He lost the cup final and didn't apologise to the supporters for it. I was pretty pissed off at that. Instead, he made excuses about it and basically dismissed it as if it wasn't a big deal. To lose a cup final, what is that? And the number of and I know people made a big song and dance about it at the weekend, right? They walked right up the tunnel after the game, never shared any time with his players, never did anything for the fans. But he's done that in every single game. He's done that every single game. He talks about this, why he engender the right atmosphere and build the right relationships with people and all that. I never saw any sign that he did any of that, or that he was interested in doing any of that. If it's true, and as I say to you, I heard a lot of rumours, right, early on. I heard one rumour in particular about senior players got to the directors early on and said, this is not working. If the rumour is true, that at his first team meeting, he basically asked them how they thought they had played in the last 8 games when they won 7 of them, and then dismissed their view that they had done well. What is that? That's Brian Clough telling the Leeds players at his first meeting with him that all the trophies and the titles they won were illegally obtained or whatever it was he said, and they should just chuck them in the bin. I mean, how are you expecting to win people? He's certainly not read his Dale Carnegie, and I'll tell you that. For a guy who plays this great store and decency and dignity and all that, he spent a lot of time undermining his players. A lot of time, even some of his press conferences, when he said that it's the players' fault, they're just no adapting, it's the players' fault, they're just no confident enough. They look pretty confident under O'Neill. And it's if you're going to criticise Rodgers for his Honda Civic comment, the comments are just as bad, if not worse. Because Rodgers at least has the experience all these 11 trophies behind him to be able to say that. And he doesn't. I don't have any sympathy for him whatsoever. He's walked away with a big pile of your club's money for doing very fucking little. Very little.
That's another reason why Nicholson shouldn't remain in situ. Because the money we've lost on this as well.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember his interviews and exact words. He used this phrase in his general media conference and also his Celtic TV conference. He says, Martin O'Neill, what a guy. And then just talked about himself. That was the sole extent of it. Martin O'Neill, what a guy. So I don't know if any of you two have noticed, but apparently there's a transfer window open just now. I've barely touched it in my blog. I did something last night on the Paul Tisdale clear out of Inamura's off to Japan and Simpson Pussy's off to Germany. So that was two of Tisdale's star signings in the summer. Neither of them made it into Europa League squad under Brendan. None of them really get a look in under 3 different Celtic managers. So, Eric, what on earth can we expect from the transfer window? Who's in charge of it? Have they handed it over to a friendly agent? Who the hell knows what's going on at this minute? Incomings and outgoings, the Celtic transfers. How do you see it, Eric?
It's very hard to put a finger on what the hell is going to happen, Joe. Because, I mean, if you don't have a manager in place before the end of January, then how can you realistically bring players in? Because, again, you're probably looking at a scenario where even if they did bring players in, there are players that might not necessarily fit into the tactical formation that a new manager decides to use. So are we now going to be in a situation where January is just going to be another non-entity? I mean, the priority is a striker, obviously. We have to get a striker in, and we have to get a prolific striker in to have any hope of pushing forward in this league. We need somebody who scores goals. It's clearly evident we don't have somebody who scores goals. So that's a no-brainer. It doesn't matter who the manager is. We have to get a striker in. But it's hard to know. Like, this is the thing. Like, they've put themselves in a position where how long are you going to ride the Sean Maloney bus for? You know, are you going to rely on Sean Maloney now for the rest of the league campaign? Are you going to rely on Sean Maloney for the rest of January? We don't know. You see, the problem is they don't communicate. They don't tell us what's going on. We have no clue what their thought process is. And at the best of times, their thought process scares the living shit out of us. So I honestly don't know what is going on. But there is one thing that I would say, and we've spoken about this before in the past. We spoke about the time where, you know, the 2016 Scottish Cup semi-final and the supposed story where the Ibrox board went apeshit in the suite next door to the Celtic board, and Dermot Desmond on foot of that decided that he was bringing Brendan Rodgers in. And everybody hailed Dermot Desmond as a genius for bringing Brendan Rodgers in, but it wasn't a genius move. It was just a move out of spite at the end of the day. And the thing is, at this moment in time, Desmond, a Dermot Desmond who has been made a fool out of, is a good thing for us. As much as I don't like to admit that, but a Dermot Desmond who's been made a fool out of is a good thing for us, because he's now smarting. Yep. And one of the commenters said there earlier on, do we think that the chance from the Ibrox supporters pushed Desmond over the edge and made him actually push this, you know, situation where the action has been taken to get rid of Nancy and Tisdale? Was that the final straw for him? And this is the thing. His reaction out of spite could actually be to bring in a top-class manager again. Now, whether that is in the guise of Ange Postecoglou, because we know Ange Postecoglou knows the club, we know Ange Postecoglou could do a fantastic job if he came back to Celtic, but only on his terms. But outside of that,
It's Martin O'Neill, Maloney, and Fotheringham to the end of the season.
Till the end of the season?
Yes.
Okay. So now, right at midstream, couldn't have happened at a better time, Joe. They have to bring players in because they have a management team till the end of the season. The question is now, and I say this now, is this designed to have Sean Maloney ready to take over full-time next season?
Doesn't matter. Steve Maloney's going to take over. If Steve Maloney gets 6 months under O'Neill, Maloney will learn more than he will ever learn in a fucking lifetime. And if O'Neill and people think Maloney's ready next season, then I will probably live with that if he's got that much experience working under O'Neill. If these guys win the league, they can write their own ticket, as far as I'm concerned. These guys win this title and win as the Scottish Cup, they can write their own fucking ticket. And the thing is, I wonder, because we're talking about the transfer market, right? I suspect that the two signings that have been made so far, the one signing that's been made so far, and the one that's almost over the line, have been made by these guys. Because I wrote about this yesterday. Those signings don't make any sense in the context of our Wilfred Nancy team. In signing a right-sided attacking midfielder, we're basically building the team that we should have built for Rodgers, right? And there's no place for a right-sided attacking midfielder in this guy's setup. I mean, Big Sutton or Michael Stewart said it the weekend, and I thought it was the smartest thing that I heard this weekend, was when they talked about, where does Chota fit into this guy's playing style? There's no immediately apparent place for a player like that in his system. And so when I heard we were trying to sign a right-sided midfielder, I thought, well, that doesn't make any fucking sense. That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't fit the pattern. That's Brendan Rodgers' team we're building. It's not his team. but it's Martin O'Neill's team we're building instead. That makes sense. That makes perfect sense. The transfer targets now make perfect sense.
I think we've got to assume that Martin O'Neill took the job with very definite promises that he's getting a striker. There is no way Martin O'Neill was coming in to be duped again by Celtic. So surely there's going to be a striker at the very least in place for the game against Dundee United. And that player's got to be brought in Tuesday, Wednesday to give them a couple of games, because Dundee United on Saturday and then Falkirk away are two. Well, every game's very difficult. The state that Wilfred Nancy's put the club in, but Celtic badly need reinforcements. But if they get the right reinforcements,
I've been willing to step in like this for a second time on short notice. They owe this guy big time. They cannot make a fool of this guy. They need to make sure that this guy doesn't. They need to make sure they don't jeopardise his reputation at this point. They've got to give this guy support. This whole month has got to be support.
Is Mark Fathering coming back?
Eh?
Got it. Is Mark Fathering? Yeah.
So I would say Celtic are slight odds against to win the league, but it's not impossible. They'll need to.
I'll confidently predict that we win the league.
Right. There's no margin for error, and that starts on Saturday against the Dundee United, and then the Falkirk. And then Martin O'Neill should tell the board, Europa League, absolutely forget it. No interest whatsoever in Bologna. No interest whatsoever in Utrecht at home. Hearts at Tynecastle is the biggest game you're going to play this. Well, maybe Auchinleck Talbot at Rugby Park, but Hearts at Tynecastle is far bigger than Bologna or Utrecht at home. But I'll be interested. Are we going to get a Martin O'Neill press conference tomorrow? Will Michael Nicholson sit alongside him? That would be box office stuff. So we'll round things off. Eric, what are you looking for on Saturday from Celtic against the Dundee United under Martin O'Neill? I think we can forget about any boycott talks. But
yeah,
if Nancy had been in charge, the place would have been half empty at best. But there'll be 50,000 or a bit more there on a horrible cold January, home to Dundee United, in the back of 6 defeats out of 8. What are you looking for from Celtic on Saturday, Eric?
Well, first and foremost, I want Kasper Schmeichel dropped because he's been a total liability. Obviously we'll probably revert back to 4-3-3. I've no doubt about that. So he'll play 4 at the back. How he sets that up now remains to be seen. But I can't see him deviating too much from what he was doing beforehand because that was working. You'll see a massive pep in the player steps anyway, you can be sure. We need a statement win. We need them to go out there and actually, hammer Dundee United to prove that this is, this is the corner turned. I did say earlier on that I didn't believe Martin O'Neill that his pride would trump his love of the club, but obviously his love has trumped his pride. His love of the club has trumped his pride. It's obviously his love of Celtic that's keeping him, coming back again and again and again. The fact that the board relies on him as their fixer speaks volumes to what he brings to the table. It's not thinking outside the box, because we all know that this board is incapable of thinking outside the box. But under the circumstances and under, if you base it on what we saw before Wilfried Nancy came in, it's the right move. It's the move that brought stability originally, and it's the move that will return stability again. So I have to broadly agree with it. I can't argue with it in any way. But at the same time, it also goes back to Nicholson and how Nicholson cannot survive this now, because it was an absolute shambles what happened under Wilfried Nancy. How much ground we lost. We lost the cup final. How much money did we lose having to pay this guy off? I mean, surely that must cost Nicholson his job. That has to cost him his job. None of this needed to happen. All of it could have been avoided. I understand that a manager had to be brought in and that Martin O'Neill was only ever going to be the interim manager to begin with. But it's the recruitment process and the way that the process was done on a wing and a prayer and on a belief that we'd have an Ange Postecoglou Mark II that has proven an utter failure from top to bottom in our systems, in our recruitment system anyway. There is no recruitment system that we know of at Celtic. And that's been evident down throughout the years. I can honestly say in the last 10 years, there has never been a proper management recruitment process at Celtic, where I believe that candidates have been brought in and interviewed and the best candidate has been selected. Brendan Rodgers was brought in because Dermot Desmond was pissed off after losing to the Ibrox side. The next manager, Neil Lennon, was brought in to replace him as interim manager and got the job in the showers. No process done whatsoever. Following that, we had, you know, Lennon fall flat in his face and Ange Postecoglou was brought in because the whole Eddie Howe debacle happened. There's never been a process. As soon as Ange left, the boys went begging Brendan to come back. Never has there been a process at Celtic for the better part of this century. Gordon Strachan was offered the job in the tent at the races. You know, so when are we actually going to see a process where there's a full managerial recruitment process going on at Celtic? I've gone off topic a bit there with that, but what I'm looking for on Saturday is a statement win, a return to a formation that works and that the players are fully understand and are capable of working within. And I need Martin O'Neill to make hard decisions. Hard decisions in that. He needs to drop Kasper Schmeichel. Kasper Schmeichel is not fucking up to it now. He makes mistake after mistake after mistake in games. He used to be a fantastic precision player, you know, when he came to passing the ball out from his goal to the defence. And he was always finding the players that he needed. But all too often of late, he's just passing the ball to the opposition. And we're getting caught with our pants down, just as we did against Motherwell. So he needs to be dropped. They need to look for a goalkeeper in this window. And people laughed at me and ridiculed me about... what's his name? Mitov. I reckon go give the guy a punt. He's a good keeper. Put him in there as an understudy. I don't see how we could lose. But they have to back him in the transfer market. It's that simple. I know Dyson Mayed is going to go, and I know it's likely that Rio Hatate is probably going to go too. But whatever is made out of the sales that happened in January has to be reinvested back in the squad and then some. But yeah, statement win. Statement win on Saturday.
Matt O'Neill is not the ideal replacement. He's not the future of Celtic. But hearing now, with the very contacts, very limited knowledge that the people at Celtic have, Matt O'Neill is the best man for it. Sean Maloney, I don't think he's got the personality to be a manager. He can be a fantastic coach, a fantastic number two, but I just don't think he has it to be... The bully, the guy that makes the tough decisions, the guy that says no to players, the guy that drops players. He can be players' best pals and help them in every way, but I don't think that's in him. James, what are you looking for? What are you expecting on Saturday against Dundee United?
Well, I was going to boycott Dundee United, mate, and I think a lot of people were. I think that was the talk that was going around, and there was a lot of people that I knew who were very up for it. My supporters bust took a poll on it, and the numbers would have been overwhelmingly against it up until the last 2 weeks. And there was a narrow majority for it, the last I heard. But I think that will be cancelled along with very much else. O'Neill brings stability in the shop. And more than stability, he brings a kind of calm leadership that the club badly needs right now. And a credibility that the club badly needs right now. Joe, you're right. There is no way he's taking this on and risking his reputation and everything else unless he knows exactly what he's getting in the transfer market. And a lot of plans, I think, already have been laid for that. And if you look at it right, there is support and evidence to suggest that our directors, at least some of them anyway, were very, very, very concerned about the appointment. And there's been a few precautionary measures taken in between. I don't think the hiring of the Chelsea scout is a coincidence. Coming at the same time as Tisdale gets punted. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that's a planned move. I think the signing of the right-sided midfielder is a planned move. I don't think it had very much to do with Nancy. So there does seem to have been some work going on. And O'Neill will want some serious guarantees, and I think he'll get them because he wouldn't be coming back otherwise. The fact that it's an interim appointment gives these guys some time to get this next one right. And they, by God, need to get this next one right. O'Neill won't take the job beyond this season, so they have to do it. They have to pull it off. and they have to make sure that they get the right person. But in terms of stability and buying his time and putting us back in this race, this has done it. As far as I'm concerned, we're in a much better place than we were at the start of the day. A much better place. And you guys know that I didn't want Emil to stay in the job for 1 minute longer than he had it. I was looking forward to getting the Wilfred Nancy era underway, because I thought that we needed a new direction and we needed a complete overhaul. In hindsight, that was as bad a decision as the board made in taking my advice. Which I don't think they did.
That we're going to perish on.
But listen, right. We're in a much better position than we were at the start of the day. We're in a vastly better place. That is, some sanity has been restored and some stability has been restored at the same time. And it is temporary. But temporary gets us through this season and we are in a bad spot right now. And this is a good emergency measure. I've got to give everybody Celtic Park credit for what they've done the last 12 hours because it's more than I thought they would do.
Yeah, but we have to hope that if we make it to the Scottish Cup final, that the job isn't offered to Sean Maloney in the showers.
I think they will need to have a permanent solution to this well before then.
Right, that's us finishing for tonight. We're on the 5th of January and Celtic have turned the clock back, if only to the 3rd of December when Martin O'Neill beat Dundee 1-0 and gave an emotional farewell to Celtic Park. So on January the 10th, we'll be back at Celtic Park in the home dugout for the game against Dundee United. But hopefully you've enjoyed our little rants and chats tonight in the podcast. Well over, I think we're pushing towards 2,200 subscribers, hopefully over that tonight. So you can find my content on Video Celts, James at the Celtic blog, and Eric on Read Celtic every day of the week. So there'll be plenty of content over the next couple of days. We look forward to the Martin O'Neill media conference. Love to see Michael Nicholson. Go on, Michael. Do it for it. Do it for Trinity Timms. You gave us two utterly forgettable interviews with Jerry McCulloch, backing your man, Wilfried Nancy. So in his 4 years as Celtic CEO, all that Michael Nicholson has spoke to Celtic TV about is Wilfried Nancy. So come on, Michael. Get on board. Get alongside Martin O'Neill and outline your vision for the future, which is hopefully somewhere far away from Celtic. So please subscribe, please like. If you're watching this later than live, please add a comment, get some chat, get some debate going. I think Eric might be waiting for a word. Have you got a final word?
Yeah, just one quick one. Stevie Woods is back as well. Right. Yeah, so the
wasn't
guy who
had written. Wasn't that interesting as well? I think Oya spent the whole weekend hearing stories about Stevie Woods going round and telling everybody that he had left and that it was going to be his final day. And there was no official announcement about that. So again, the defeat of the weekend has not taken anybody at Celtic by surprise. And they've acted exactly as they had planned to act. So I think Stevie Woods was told, you sat on this resignation for 24 hours, mate. You might not need to go. Somebody else might be going.
That's us finishing up. Just remember, not another penny. No matter who's in the dugout, no matter who's in the team sheet, don't spend any money on Celtic. Avoid the January sales. Don't buy a pie or Bovril and starve them out. It's already paying dividends. Full marks to the collective. They've got the ball rolling. There's some changes happening. A few complacent guys have been shaken up a bit. And hopefully, how good would it be if we're back next week discussing the resignation of Michael Nicholson? That's all, folks. Cheers.
Absolutely fantastic. See you next week, guys.